You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora, my name is Jamie Hanton, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Based in central Christchurch since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to achieve a higher level of professional and creative development and encourage a greater acknowledgement, understanding, and value of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. We are proud to present Episode 3 of Art Not Science, a monthly podcast that showcases events and exhibitions at the Physics Room. In this episode, we have Tanu Nano and Tapuaki Helu talking about Tanu's exhibition, Savage in the Garden, which showed at the Physics Room earlier this year. Tanu Nano is an interdisciplinary artist and award-winning photographer of Samoan heritage. Born in Samoa and raised in Mangere, Nano works predominantly in new media with a portfolio of work that includes stage portraiture, moving image, and film. His practice is collaborative and examines the cultural framing, decolonization, social politics, queer activism, and gender and sexually diverse narratives. Nano is co-founder and creative director of Pacific LGBT arts collective, FAFSWAG. Savage in the Garden was developed during Nano's time as artist-in-residence at the Macmillan Brown Centre for Pacific Studies at the University of Canterbury in 2018. The exhibition was a collaboration with a small community of Pacific Island men from around Aotearoa and features Tongan model Tapuaki Helu and members of the FAFSWAG arts collective and extended creative whānau. Savage in the Garden presents a series of images and audio recordings responding to provocations about what it means to be a queer Pacific Island man and centres queerness as a site for exploration and a pressure point for open social discussion. The power of the colonial gaze continues to deprive everyday Indigenous people of sovereign representations of their own bodies and life experiences. Complex portrayals of Pacific men as emotionally sophisticated are, in 2019, still positioned as cultural anomalies. What Pacific men want to see of themselves is also deeply entrenched in the same colonial codes of traditional Western masculinity. Here are Tanu, Tapuaki, and myself in conversation during the exhibition of Savage in the Garden. Kia ora tātou, welcome to the Physics Room. My name is Jamie Hanson, I'm the director here, and I'm joined by Tanu Nano and Tapuaki Helu. So we're sitting in Savage in the Garden, which is one outcome from Tanu's residency with the Macmillan Brown Centre for Pacific Studies last year. So I thought just by way of an introduction to the exhibition and the context, I'd just ask Tanu to kind of explain the process of the residency and how you came to be in Ōtautahi.
So last year, I might start further back. I'm based in Auckland and part of a queer arts collective called FAFSA. I kind of fell into this random default role of like doing lots of arts administration for like a catfish organization that doesn't even have a real structure. It's just a group of friends who identified a gap in the industry and wanted to occupy that with our ideas and our voices and stuff. And so for the last couple of years, I kind of set aside my personal art practice to like be an official kind of like office worker with no office. And so when the residency, there was like an open call for applications, and I thought it would be a great opportunity to like revisit my practice, because I had been like ghost curating lots of other people's work, and lots of the conversations and that kind of soft massaging process was around things that I was interested in. And then I realized, oh, I should just do my own shit, right? Just like, so I applied for the residency. And because a bulk of my practice had kind of shifted from this very individual thing that was me kind of investigating ideas and masculinity to like a broader practice around working with communities and large groups of people, the project I pitched to do down here was like a community engagement kind of project. So the idea was to come down and meet with community groups and connect with people. And I thought, oh, I do this every day at home. It's easy. And I got to Christchurch or Ōtautahi, and I really struggled a little bit And I started to feel lots of the isolation of Christchurch, as specifically as like a Pacific or Polynesian person. And then, yeah, just small things started to kind of become really apparent, like not seeing brown faces was a thing, and not seeing queer people was a big thing as well. And I remember I have this relationship with a dancer down here, his name's Sean, and we collabed together while I was last here. But I remember seeing him for the first time, and I was like, oh my God, where have you been? And he was just like, oh yeah, we're out here. And so lots of the intention behind the residency shifted when I got here, just looking at what it meant to feel that isolation and what the process was like to feel orientated or reconnected with people. Because in Auckland, I really took it for granted that I was embedded in a community that is always present with each other and always part of our lives. And I can pick up a phone and make things happen and, you know, move things around. I couldn't do that here in Christchurch. And so I had to take a couple steps back and be like, I think it's like starting from scratch. And like, I think this residency is just about arriving at people and not assuming that I could just come down here and be like, hey guys, let's do some cool stuff. And so, yeah, my time at the Macmillan Brown Center for Pacific Studies was just me just trying to find people and identify our community. And I was really lucky to have people like Kai, who's here in the audience today, give me some kind of guidance and direction around who to talk to and places where I could meet people, open invitations for dinner and stuff like that. So that was cool. And so it just gave me a lot of time to reflect on my practice and what it is that I actually do. So instead of a lot of my initial intentions to be like to come down guns blazing were kind of like set aside and the reality started to settle in. And then all of a sudden I had this like time and emotional space to reflect on my practice. And so I've been practicing art for 10 years now. And when I started, I just was photographing young Polynesian males. And similar to the excitement of the residency, when I first started my career, I was really excited about addressing certain contradictions in my cultural experience, especially around like Pacific masculinity. And so my early work is really like that, guns blazing, kind of like trying to talk about all these things that are really complex. And 10 years on from that, I realized that I used to put these really difficult conversations into public space thinking that I was like changing the culture. And then 10 years later, I was like, no one really cared except for me. Like no one cared more than me. And I feel like my time down here in Christchurch helped me to figure that out. And then all of a sudden it just changed the direction of my practice, because I realized that that everything I've done up until that point was probably more about a personal process as opposed to a creative process. And so the art was just like a byproduct of this like personal journey that I went on to like figure out stuff about masculinity. But I was explaining to Tupple recently that I kind of see it like, my friend Ruben Patterson, he's a painter and he's been doing these glitter paintings for years. He does a lot of other stuff in his practice, but he's well known for these gorgeous glitter paintings. And I realized after 10 years that like masculinity is like my glitter painting. And I'm just gonna be talking about this thing for a long time. So I need to stop feeling like I'm in a rush. And I just need to like, settle into it, get comfortable, and really just hold that concept as an artist. And so the show kind of came out of that thinking. And so I went back to these old ideas where I thought I was changing the culture and stuff, and I wanted to scrutinize some of my old methods around practicing. My friend Daniel Sartella, he's like an academic, an artist, and he was one of the first people who modeled for me when I first started photographing boy. And Art New Zealand asked him to write like an article about my practice. And I think the opening sentence was like, Tanagong was not a photographer. And I was like, thanks, man. but I reread that article recently, before I made this work, and there's heaps of critiques in this text, in this body of writing, that at the time when I read it, I wasn't ready to hear this. But now I'm like super ready, and I can actually receive lots of the critique and the I guess the reframing of like certain ideas.
Can you talk about the, like, what did it mean for you, and what did you need to unpack when it said that you're not a photographer? Like, what do you think was the subtext around that?
Well, Daniel did this thing where he talked about the subjects in my portraiture as being these silent figures that didn't really have a voice, but were being kind of maneuvered to articulate someone else's voice, and that voice just happened to be mine. And I've explained this to a lot of people, that when you're looking at one of my portraits, you're looking at me. Like, you're not really, the person is kind of a representation of an idea or a conversation. And I think after 10 years, it's time for that to kind of shift, because, yeah, just in recognizing this conversation around the colonial gaze and how much autonomy and agency that a lot of my ancestors didn't have when they were being photographed, you know, during that period, and how voiceless they were. And so this project felt more like a collaboration with Tupu. I wanted to do everything again, but differently, and just like take on board all this critique that I hadn't been listening to for a long time, and just refine the conversation, but yeah, attempt to like decolonize my own practice a little bit. Yeah. Which I don't think a lot of artists do, like, in terms of refining. Some people are just happy to keep pushing that certain agenda or idea.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
So what does that look like, and what does collaboration look like with Tapu in this?
Well, I didn't want you to just be a pretty boy.
Yeah.
In the Vogue community, if you want a category on the floor, you basically become like an icon. And so everyone knows everyone who's ever won a grand prize. And Tapu is a grand prize Six Siren winner from 2019.
And very recent. So,
yeah, it's pretty recent. But people call him that. Like,
yeah. And I don't have a name anymore. It's like Sex Siren. I was like, yeah. Hi, Sex Siren. Like,
yeah, Sex yeah. Siren 2019. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's carbon dated and shit. And, like, it's just super funny. But I think about that in terms of like how people are doing this process of, because even in the community, there's lots of that. You just become your body, or, and yeah, I just thought it was important for you to have more agency as a person, as a subject of interest for a piece of artwork. But Tup and I had this conversation about how, like, Jerry the Fafafenge and Avanoa Tamo and all these, like, other artworks that I made, they didn't change the culture. And ultimately, what people want to see is a naked boy and a bush. And so we were just like, let's just give them what they want to see. And so, yeah, we... Ta-da! Yeah, because, like, when you're tapped into the poly kind of social consciousness online, it's very much that. It's girls in hula skirts, it's, like, endless feeds of topless boys.
Yeah, lava lavas.
And lava lavas.
With flowers. Yeah. Just
and it's super exhausting to look at, especially as a fat bitch. I'm just like, what? And so like, you know, there's... So we were just like, wouldn't it be funny just to like troll people and just be like, you know, but really there's complex ideas under this. And it's just like, well, there are, but like, you know, it's just packaged in the way that people are used to consuming them. Because before, I used to build sets and do all this art design and then costume design and put the models into these fake environments and stage them into these like cultural narratives. And it was so exhausting. And ultimately, what people left with was still... It wasn't strong enough to counter this impression of the naked boy in the bush. that's still stuck in people's minds. So like,
and yeah. How did that change for the process with this series? Like, in terms of just those mechanical things of set and...
Oh, well, it's all stripped back. There's no fake reality. There is a fake reality, but it's less, like, contrived. Yeah. Because... had to think about what this means when Polynesian people look at it. Because when they would see my old stuff, they had no idea that those rooms were constructed. That we spent 2 days like putting things on the walls and like designing those spaces. They just looked at those spaces and thought, oh, that's my auntie's house. Or, you know, because they were all kind of purposely built around aesthetics that I grew up with as a kid, and so I just felt like I was lying to people. But also I felt like I was just like making this thing for Pakeha consumption, because conceptually it sounded like a really great idea, but like when you're from the culture it didn't really mean anything. You're just like, meh, it's my living room. But I'll sit with Ron Brownson from Auckland Art Gallery and we'll really have this dense cultural unpacking of those images. And I was like, there's a massive disconnect here between like what my people experience when they see this work and then what the art world experiences and what Pakeha people experience. And then somewhere in between that is this really vital, important conversation about masculinity. And I just felt like that conversation was getting lost with all the like different articulations. And I was like, let's just strip everything bare. bare, take your joy. Yeah. Yeah, we talked a lot about the work, but I'm really curious to know how you feel about it.
For me, it just, because it was kind of like, do you want a model? And I've been with FAF for the shortest time amongst, I think, one of the new members. And having to put myself in that spot of being like almost like a face for a piece. Like, the first time I met Tanu was for Apparatus, which is one of the parts in the video. And that was like Patsy putting up a call out for Pacific Islander, like queer or just anyone poly-bodied that wants to be on the film. Because Tanya was looking for some guys, but not many were interested. And then on the day I heard that many were like, I don't know, I guess they didn't want to be naked in front of a camera and get seen in that sense. But for me it was interesting because when I first met them, I was like discovering identity for myself as like culturally and also sexually, like my orientation. And I was like clicking with them and I didn't realize there was a world out there that I could connect with. And it was eye-opening, especially for this video. And trying to be a subject for someone else's vision was hard, like for the film as well. Like, he told me to be natural and fluid in the way I feel comfortable, but to me, in my head, it was like, is this the fluidity that he wanted me to be, in the sense of like what he's trying to portray for his artwork and what he's like, trying to achieve? Yeah, and so there's a lot of second work together. So I'm trying to like draw back the whole, I can put myself in it without having just to be object or a subject to someone else's ideas. Like bits and pieces, I can identify myself in an image without having to lose myself. Like the whole, like, I can portray emotions like I do myself, but through the photography that he captures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the way I like put my body, that's me. Like, I think the red one would be somehow, it's like my pose. I'll do that, like something silly like this, that's still me. And I'm like, he's like, I think we caught a few photos, but it wasn't right. But then somehow this one, which I was like just flinging my body out, was the one he liked best out of all of them. So I was like, yeah, I feel connected to that because it's both his vision that he wants to capture, but also mine because it's me and how natural it is.
Okay, you talked about how like, how I remember we picked that one because we were like, oh, you look like a superhero.
Yeah, it was like Storm or someone yeah, from the X-Men.
Yeah, lots of the shoot was like technical direction. And so I try not to like dictate people's feelings or how they should, like their facials. It's mostly like, can you hit this light? Yeah, or give me a bit more.
Yeah, and he'll say smile, but I don't like smiling most of the time, so yeah.
Smile's like the default. You work backwards from smile and then like just like chip away a little bit.
So it's like, yeah, smile, like, is this me smiling now? And it's like, no.
I think the average person does not enjoy smiling. Someone who's photographed a lot of people, they're just like...
Yeah, it's hard to be natural in front of a camera as well. Just like, I don't know. Like, and then trying to fake it is not the same thing.
Yeah,
you can see that.
Yeah, I see that. It's really interesting, the idea of like the natural, because in the sound work, so there's like a 1 hour long sound work on the MP3 players in the gallery that's comprised of interviews and news stories as well, and there's a really great conversation in the middle of that when you're talking about walking and being told how to walk, or like being instructed how to walk as a man and like performing that masculinity.
So yeah, so growing up in Tonga, there's like a like masculine sort of like type of walking. So I would walk and then people like my dad or my brothers were like pointing out that my hips move too much. And I'm like, okay, so I try to like mentally when I'm walking, like most of the time when I grew up, I'll be thinking, okay, no, hips don't move, like as I step, which is kind of like how do you train your body not to do that? Like, and it's, every day I'm like struggling to like do it. And then sometimes when someone catches me walking, I still see my hips like do it. So it's like, I'm like, yeah, it didn't work. Like, it's still moving how it, like they told me not to. Yeah, so growing up, like trying to force yourself to be masculine, even though you think this is how my body works and just walking normally or naturally for you and how it feels right and getting told it's not right. It's
yeah, I feel like fathers in particular, maybe I shouldn't speak for everyone, but like, just Polynesian dads are really, like in terms of reforming your masculinity, like they get you like real young. It's like, you're a baby, act like a man, baby. You know what I mean?
It's, have a deep voice, baby. It's like,
yeah, it totally is. You know what? Go and like do the rubbish. Yeah. But it's, yeah, so we, in this conversation, we kind of talk about how, just unpack a little bit of like our earliest impressions of masculinity, and for lots of us it was experiences that we shared with our fathers, and they were kind of like our first like template of what it meant to be a man. But we also talk about how as adults we're kind of like letting go of some of those ideas that were passed down to us because they don't work anymore. Like if someone told me not to move my hips, like, girl, bye. Because I'm not even built that way. I have hips, man. Like, I'll be in, like, a cafe and just try to turn around and, like, knocking shit over. But I just think, like, we're in a place now culturally where scrutinizing these old, very stoic ideas of body reform that come with masculinity, it's like something this new generation is really committed to, because they just don't want to be that anymore, or they can't. Like, some of it's just really unrealistic, and Yeah. And I think works like this are really important to facilitate some of those talanoa, that conversation. And I'm not sure if this is universal, but in Pacific contexts, men just don't talk about their feelings.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? What's wrong with you? But there's a lot wrong. I think there's a lot wrong with the culture and society in terms of what we're allowed to talk about as guys without being all wham about it. Like, yeah. Sorry. I know that sounds like down to wham. No, like, no, I took that help. Just sit in there for a minute. Yeah. I think mostly, because Pacific men experience body and masculinity reform, not just only from the men in our culture, but from the cultures outside of us as well. Turn on the television and you can just see examples of that, because we only appear in certain contexts in the broader culture of New Zealand when we're physical and we're virile and we're here to be... to build things with our hands and and I don't think the reality of what we live in as men is that thing. I think it's a bit more complex, and our people are a bit more emotionally complex and intelligent than they like to let on, and not these like one-dimensional images. And so the idea was to reproduce these one-dimensional things, but totally as like a caricature, or like, and I think that's why they have such simple color to them. Just like, yeah, if we're gonna go there, let's just do it. Eh?
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
I'm curious, Tanya, because you said you don't feel like you've, changing the culture, and I'm curious to know what that might mean, and how you measured that. You said that this 10 years of making work in a certain way and putting it in public space, what were those public spaces? Because I can imagine that they were like all sorts of different public spaces, and they would have different kind of effects and... on different audiences and people.
I've been really spoiled as an artist. Like, my first solo exhibition came straight after film school, and so the trajectory for my practice has just been all these really bougie art galleries. And so I think the changing the culture conversation kind of comes from recognizing that my work set very separate from the culture, and in places that they couldn't always access. I have to think about whether or not my dad and my uncles would go to an art gallery to experience that. And so I was just thinking about where we place these conversations and where I've traditionally placed them. And when I look back on my practice, it was, Auckland Art Gallery, City Gallery Wellington, Enjoy, all these places that that I don't think traditionally the men in my culture frequent these spaces. Well, that's where they go to experience critique of their own masculinity. And so, if anything, we should have been doing these at the rugby club, or just down at the pub or something. Because I just wanted to feel like. Because the conversation is so important to me, that it was important to other people as well. And I can see in the arts, there's definitely artists who have felt inspired by lots of these conversations and motivated to create their own narratives in their own work. But when I go back home, or go back to South Auckland and to Otara, everything is still the same. So frustrating sometimes. And then you see, Patti and I really identified that there's a massive generational change, because we went to art school and recently, I think it was last year, and the gender identity of lots of the Pacific male students was really like ambiguous. And all of a sudden, the old male archetype in terms of what people look like and how they present themselves in public, it was like slowly dying, and we were like, yeah. And so it was cool. We could all of a sudden have these conversations with people and be like, oh, what are your pronouns? And like, you know, and so it was, we could see that the culture was shifting in that way. But it's just those dense Polynesian spaces where it's like, it's still very traditional and hierarchical and patriarchal. And yeah, and it's those spaces where I feel like the culture really doesn't care what artists have to say, because they're just like recycling lots of old traditions. And I think it's a privilege to have these conversations in a space like this, you know what I mean? So maybe that's the conversation that we should be looking at in terms of where does the conversation live, or where should it live? So I guess that's what it looks like for me.
And how do you feel being in the art world space type of event? Is this like
it's scary, like, to walk in and see everyone who understands the art and be from, like, I study graphic design, I just graduated, and it's them, like, I understand a little bit, but not too much of the art world, so I can understand the technical talk and everything like that comes with it, but I still see, like, I just separate myself because mine is more, it's graphic design, it's not as dense or like really detailed in that sense, but it's great. Like, I get, so my last project was somewhat graphic design, somewhat artistic. That's how I got in touch with these guys, and we connected through that about identity, and I started doing videography. So I filmed myself doing some real out of my box stuff, so that was good. But it's, yeah, it's eye-opening. Like, you can see this different world, and you kind of like understand more of yourself through the arts that Tanu and Patsy and most of the guys and girls that I hang around with at the FAF house, like what they're putting out into the spaces that people can actually identify, like, especially Pacificos. Yeah,
I think that's what it is, eh? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what Patsy and I are starting to understand, is that for lots of people, it's a personal experience.
Yeah.
It's a personal journey. It's never been like an intellectual thought exercise.
Yeah.
It's never been... Yeah, because we are... There are definitely places where we feel like we're transforming people's lives. And we can count on, like, just one hand what that looks like. But when I think about it, it's all very... Like, it's people who are in a place in their life where they're trying to figure stuff out around their masculinity or their gender or their identity.
And it's just not, it's not scary like you think. Just because they're artistic doesn't mean they're unapproachable. Like, when I started talking to them, like, they're just humans trying to like find someone that's similar to them, and I like resonate with that, so we're like just bonding over the similarities in our lives and just different backgrounds. But some of the stories we just like laugh at, it's like just growing up in Tonga, like trying to be masculine even though you're very feminine and that kind of stuff. Like, we laugh at it, but it's a, like, a bonding experience. And yeah, just,
yeah, because both of us went to high school in Tonga, so we have that shared trauma.
Yeah,
and Tonga is like really intense for masculinity because they have a kind of matriarchal society, and men have a very social function. Like, there's a what's that thing called, where like it's like a respect, but it's more complex. It's where men are not allowed to occupy a space that's reserved for women.
Oh yeah.
And so you can't there's this thing called fa'apa'apa where you can't
fa'apa'apa. So it's like, if the girls are watching TV in the lounge, the guys can't be in the same, like, they can't be watching the same TV or in the lounge as well. They stay clear of like anywhere near there.
Yeah, spaces are real gendered.
Yeah, and if guys are in the kitchen, the girls stay away from the kitchen and stuff like that. It's, yeah. So but it's slowly merging now, like, especially in generations, like, brothers and sisters can do that now. They're just like watching the same movies. Because I remember think a few years back when I was in Wellington, went to cinemas myself, my sisters and their partners. Mm-hmm. And we were starting to watch, like, so my sisters and me, like, we're all good with, like, the whole occupying the same space. But when the movie started, I got tapped on the shoulder and my sister asked me to leave because her husband wasn't comfortable in, like, the whole sharing the having the brother with the sister and the partners in the same room watching the same, like, movie. Yeah. So to me, like, it hurt me bad, but then I was like, it made sense because he's kind of like, yeah, it's a cultural thing for him. And my sisters were, like, devastated that they had to actually choose his side and ask me to, like, excuse myself from a space that we would normally, like, share because we grew up in that sort of, like, family that we're, like, did for up, like, respect each other's space, but also occupied because we love, like, just, like, sharing that home. Yeah.
I worked in sexual health for 4 years, and just as a facilitator, we had to identify the Tongan students in the room, and if they were even cousins, they had to be given separate sessions. We couldn't put them all in the same room just because it's, like, culturally inappropriate to talk about, yeah, to talk about sexuality and condoms when your cousin's in the room. And, like, if you don't practice in this way, you could create, like, cultural harm. So when they go home, they have to confront the reality that they shared a space that was a violation of their cultural vibe. Like, and lots of organizations and just people don't understand this when they're, like, working with a lot of young people, that there's cultural ways of operating. But I think about that stuff around cultural safety, but I also think about what it means for us as a collective to put these conversations into a space. And I think that's why they sit in galleries, because it's probably the safest space to put them without, like, taking it to a cultural space, because that's when it gets murky and, like, we could get in real trouble, like, with some of these conversations, especially if we're talking about sexuality and stuff. And I think that's the biggest, like, thing for Patti and I, is when we feel like we're trying to create these alternative ways of Pacific people seeing themselves in the culture, we have to do it outside of the culture, yeah. Which is kind of, can be tricky or just frustrating. Yeah. Definitely frustrating for my, yeah, when I think about the work.
We've got an amazing audience, so I might throw it open to the floor if there are any questions for Tanu or Tapu so far.
If you go to the Imaginative kind of film festival, I grew up in Amiskwasi, Turtle Island, and I went back there for Christmas and kind of recognized just how different the colonial situation is there. Just in terms of kind of coming down to Ototahi versus that experience of going over there, what was that experience like being in a completely different context like that and reflecting on other people's experiences there compared to your own back home?
It's hard when you're here, when you're in Aotearoa, you kind of, everything feels like it's a big deal. Like, social issues, I guess, and cultural issues feel like they always feel really overwhelming and like they need to be refined or unpacked and addressed by a collective group of people. But then I was overseas, I was in Toronto, and the native people came up to me and they said to me, in your country, you have a university, an indigenous university. And I was like, oh, you're talking about the Wananga. And it didn't occur to me, like it didn't. But they were just, for them, that was incredible. We have this indigenous place where we can go learn our culture and our knowledge, and it's credited in the same way that academic knowledge is credited. And that just blew their minds. And I was like, so there was heaps of things where at home I was like, oh, we've got all these issues, but they seem really overwhelming, but in the world kind of global conversation, we have it pretty good here. There were so many things that I was just like, oh my God, I take that for granted. We have that at home. We have certain relationships with tangata whenua. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm from New Zealand. and so I felt really like lots of things. I started to understand my context a bit more. And especially as a Polynesian person, because there are a lot of people there who are fighting for sovereignty over their cultural lands and their spaces. And I was just like, man, there's definitely difficulty here, and there's definitely things that are happening that are tied to like this historical relationship with colonization. But when I look at the global conversation, I feel like some of us are better off than other, I guess, indigenous cultures. And so it was really cool to just reorientate my values a little bit and also feel like, man, I am pretty lucky to live in Aotearoa as an indigenous person. Yeah. And then I got really homesick.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to go home now. Toronto was hard. It was another thing around like visible queer people. But I went to a vote ball there. I was like, oh my God, thank you. And so I got my life. But the thing about Imaginative is that it's very two-spirited.
Right.
And so that was awesome as well. Like just being connected into things that had been normalized. Like there was queer visibility, but it wasn't like straight people and queer people. It was just people. And yeah, I appreciated that.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Any other questions for
I really love the green work, but I wonder, is that someone's garden? Like, where is that?
Yo, so that's my house. And that's Jermaine's bedroom, aka the like art closet. So we've got this massive archive of like artworks and stuff, and they're all kind of sandwiched in Jermaine's room, and then he has a little space for his bed, and then I think he uses artworks as like a wardrobe as well. Yeah, but that I kind of cleared out the window and just put some lights in there. But this is, I think some of those are weeds. Like, I don't even think they're like proper plants, but there's a bunch of like plants just on the side of our front door that are like turning into like, monsters. At one point I came out and Patti had like cable tied everything, and I was like, oh, it's an installation. We're not very like green fingered. So we're like, can I take a photo? Like, does that work? Like, if I change the thing, will it be like grouped? I don't know. Yeah.
And on that title, could you talk a little bit more about apparatus as a kind of you explained it as like a six part kind of piece?
Last year I just set myself a challenge of like creating new work. And so I just wanted to create a series of visual poems about masculinity. I work a lot with dancers. I'm filming dancers all the time. And so I was just like, I sat down with a collective called Coven, and they do Vogue activation. And they're really incredible performers. And I just knew I wanted to work with them to have a conversation about tenderness and what it looks like for men to share emotional proximity that isn't like violent, where they could like touch each other, and it's platonic and it's non-sexual and it's non-aggressive, and it was just being tender and stuff like that. So each of the vignettes explores a different idea about Pacific masculinity. It opens with my nephews, and I really wanted to talk about a time and period where you're still kind of forming your understanding of the world, and how like what that looks like when the world is still placing expectation on it. And then there's a very literal series of like boys in the garden at the end who are just like barreling the camera. I always like to bring my audience into my work, so like I feel like there's something really powerful about being stared at, and yeah, and then people staring back at you. So different pieces, but the work was commissioned for an exhibition talking about the work of Mirata Mita and Barry Bartley, who were two Māori indigenous filmmakers who helped to like create indigenous film in Aotearoa. And their practice talks a lot about what it means to decolonize the lens. And so for me, I just wanted to put Pacific content by a Pacific person in front of a camera and talk about the things that interest me, because I'm living in a time period where I can do that and I won't get punished for it, or it won't end up in the rubbish bin. Or like, you know, yeah.
And you have those excerpts from Return to Paradise, that the 1953 kind of yes. South Seas fantasy film in there as well.
Yeah, kind of stitching them all together. So it's just I just wanted the colonial gaze to be really apparent. Because this is my gaze, my lens. But it's fully informed by this idea that we don't always get to decide things for ourselves. Like I said, like we're being reformed by our own culture, but also cultures outside of it. Constantly reforming our bodies and what we should look like, how we sound, what it means to be Polynesian. I look like this, but when I'm in a context of my own people and I start talking, they're like, oh, you're such a white, but you know, they say the most like distorted things, and you're just like, at what point do you just, are you allowed to just be this version of a Polynesian in the contemporary world, you know, without it being measured by a whole bunch of rules that don't even service anyone, except for these, they're like, ideas or whatever. Yeah. That's why I enjoyed when you said humans. I was like, yay, we made it. We're the humans now. It's like, cool.
Thanks. Earlier, you described FAFSWAG as catfishing. You alluded to giving people what they want. How important is this moment where you get to talk? Because I feel like there's a bait and switch happening here. You've given us the images that we want to see, and now you're giving us the real talk. How important is that moment to talk in the context of your work? Is this part of the work? And will this weddle appear on the MP3 recording?
Yeah, totally, that's the plan. Hey, Jimmy. Just removing barriers to access. I take it really personally that, that Pacific people can't access better ideas about themselves. It's like, what is that? Like, and whose fault is it? Is it ours? Like, are we the ones responsible? So, yeah, I'm just excited that we get to keep thinking about it. And also, I get to take the responsibility of removing those barriers for people, whatever they look like. And I just use the catfish thing because, like, I feel like there's an expectation from institutions for collective practice to look a certain way. So for a lot of institutions, funders, sponsors or whatever, it's very technical, but sometimes collective practice can just be, like, caring about each other. Like, can we just do that? Like, can we just love each other and like talk about good shit and like without it being like broken down into some like structural organizational thing. And we spend a lot of time in like big offices, like trying to translate our motivation and intention to big corporates and organizations who are constantly just like trying to maneuver us in certain ways. And and I think for like a group of people who probably didn't have the confidence to push back, they would have just like conformed to a lot of expectations for people. So the way that we, and this is why it's so important to me, the way that we combat that is just by talking about it. Here we have to talk about it, otherwise like our voices just disappear and nothing changes. And 10 years from now we'll still be having the same boring ass conversation. And that's the thing that like just breaks my heart, because I'm like, it's connecting the the generational conversation about the struggle against colonial reform, about, you know, self-love and what that fucking looks like just on a human level, and like the idea that, yeah, it's just a piece of art, but it's also a tool, it's also like a weapon, it's also like a very crucial piece of changing our reality. And so, like, yeah, I just hope that in the future it sits more deeply with the culture. And I hope, like, when Fastwork's doing their 25-year retrospective or whatever, that, like, people get it. And I hope it doesn't take that long, you know? Like, I was just being at the Pacific Sisters exhibition. I was like, really, people, it took you 25 years to acknowledge these women and be like, what you were doing was powerful and you know, important work? That drove me crazy. I was like, we're going to be waiting another 50 years before people turn around and be like, oh, did Fastwork make a difference? And we'll be like, yeah, we did. And I think collectively, that's a space where we can make the most difference, because, like, I feel like in my individual practice, I just feel like I'm banging my head against the wall a little bit sometimes. But as I said, I've, like, really dug in my feet. I'm sitting in my, like, masculinity glitter painting. I'm going to be here for a long time talking about this shit. So I'm just going to get comfortable and settle. And, yeah. That felt really unnecessary.
Yeah. Okay. If there's no more questions, we might call it a day there. Thank you so much, Tanya. Thank you so much, Tapu, for talking so honestly and openly about the work and everything that's going on around it. It's been awesome having you down here to facilitate this conversation. So,
can I just say thank you to yourself and Hope and Audrey and the whole team here and community of people for coming up and receiving our message. Oh my God, I sound like a Mormon. our story. yeah, thanks for having us. It's I know it's a rough time in the city, so it's just really extremely flattering to be able to still make art, you know? That life still goes on and you still get to talk about things that are important, so thank you.
Thanks everyone for coming. It's been great.
Visit the Physics Room at 49-59 Worcester Boulevard. Open 10 till 5 from Tuesday to Friday and 11 till 4 Saturday and Sunday. The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Signtech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.